I'll start with the red line first. A big one for me. So, you know, I come from a humanities background, very, you know, I have my guitar in the background here. I absolutely respect and appreciate original creative expression, right? You know, I've seen some posts lately on LinkedIn. I wrote a children's book using ChatGPT. You did? You did? And it makes me, it makes me cringe and it makes me sick, to be honest with you, because it's just like flatly an idiotic thing to write, right? And I don't mean the person who wrote it is an idiot. I just mean they just thoughtlessly wrote something, you know, to be on trend, right? You didn't write a children's book with ChatGPT. You prompted ChatGPT with something and it created an algorithmic output based on a model it had of literature of some kind, and that's what you got. Now, if you publish that and you put your name on it, shame on you. Get ready to deep dive into the world of digital transformation, where we explore the latest trends, innovations, and challenges shaking up industries. Join us as we decode the secrets behind successful digital strategies and hear from experts who are at the forefront of disrupting the status quo. In each episode, we'll unravel the mysteries of the digital realm and uncover the hidden opportunities that lie within. From artificial intelligence to blockchain, from automation to cybersecurity, we'll leave no digital stone unturned. But hold on tight, because this podcast isn't your average tech talk. We're injecting a hefty dose of wit and humor into every episode, making learning about digital transformation an absolute blast. So if you're ready to embrace the digital revolution with a smile on your face, tune in to the Digital Disruption Podcast and get ready to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Don't miss out on the fun. Subscribe now and join us on this wild digital journey.
Hello and good morning. Hello, Patrick. How are you doing?
Hi, Daoud. Good to see you. Good evening, and great to be back with you.
No, definitely. Hopefully for the people who are listening, we have not been missing for a while because the episodes keep going up, but we have been missing from each other for a little bit. So happy to be back, and happy to be back with, you know, everyone's favorite subject, AI. it's always in the news for whatever new reason. Like I think yesterday was it, day before, Gemini, Google. So we have a lot of questions and we have a lot of concerns and we have a lot of problems that, you know, we shall address from the point of digital transformation. So I will leave the mic to you, but I would definitely want to know, you know, the how AI is changing the landscape, the digital landscape. How is it, you know, what is the lines, the gray lines, the red lines, the black lines, you know, of what people can do, especially with AI being on the sketchy side when it comes to privacy. That's definitely one of the hottest thing that companies should be looking for. But also, where does machine learning, because everyone thinks, you know, AI, but there is also a big chunk of machine learning happening, and how does it affect companies? So I want to know from you, you know, your take on the AI and the current craze that is going on, but also what new potentials and issues does AI and machine learning bring to businesses, companies, enterprises? How can we take advantage? What to look for? What is the problem that it presents? And how can we fix it? So, out to you.
Sure. No, thanks for teeing that up so nicely. Just funny enough, right before we jumped on this podcast, I just got this email, you know, less than a half an hour ago. You're invited. Maximize the potential of AI in 2024. This, and I get multiple emails like this, you know, every day. AI, ML, GPT, right? Generative AI. These things are all the buzz right now. So part of the excitement is just people within the industry love to hear themselves repeating words that they think are on trend and popular. So you know there is just that sort of virality component to everyone's attention being on AI and ML. And then there is the reality, the substance behind that, which is that artificial intelligence in general is fundamentally reshaping, you know, some of the ways that you know, people do people work, create. So there are some fundamental shifts happening because of these technologies and systems. We'll try to tease some of that out. Maybe we can dispel some of the mythology, and we can clarify some of the reality and potential of these solutions. And hopefully, we can also tease out some of the kind of you know, ethical, social, and kind of cultural implications of these systems as well, because they're not insignificant. I mean, the one of the funny things is that when we see these sort of buzzy headlines and clickbaits and things like that, right? Like, so for example, maximize the potential of AI in 2024 as an email headline. This actually came from Segment.io, not to pick on Segment, but they just happened to be the one that just sent me this email. It reflects the buzz rather than the substance, right? In the sense that that regardless of what tool sets marketers and data scientists use, e-commerce people, B2B marketers, whoever it is, AI and ML are not a substitute for well-designed use cases, business objectives, marketing objectives, having good products, having good content, all of these things, right? So to the extent that AI as a general category and ML specifically are useful, they're useful because you have other foundations in place that AI and ML help to amplify, make more efficient, more effective, more optimal, right? But they don't make bad things good, right? They don't serve that function as far as I can tell. Like they don't make people want to own a terrible product. And they don't make people want to interact with a terrible service offering or terrible content. I don't think that those technologies do that in any way, shape, or form, and they're unlikely to. I guess with that said, I guess maybe we can. I guess we can start. One thing I will say is there is not a generally accepted industry definition of what artificial intelligence is and what machine learning are, right? I mean, the sort of the way the origin story goes, or the origin myth that tries to trace artificial intelligence back to, I you know, around 1955, you know, Turing's like statement on it of, you know, machine, you know, these what machines can do that embody a certain level of human-like intelligence, right? Obviously, the AI systems we have today rely on computational power, which is many times more than in the 1950s. And the way the term artificial intelligence is used in the marketplace embodies, you know, everything from just flat out like futurist mythology to, you know, apocalyptic, you know, anti-humanism, you know, like the rhetoric of what AI is sort of all over the place, right? But let's say for shorthand, AI, artificial intelligence as an umbrella is, you know, systems of connected technology that display human-like you know, reasoning and decision-making behaviors, right? And they usually rely on like, you know, connected systems, so data models and various kinds of other connected systems. Machine learning is generally thought of as a subset of AI as an umbrella. And machine learning is, are essentially, so machine learning systems are models that are trained on data, on large data sets, in order to have predictive capabilities. And the, I guess another key component of that is that ML models have built-in self-optimizing capabilities. In other words, they get better at predictions over time as they're exposed to more and more data, right? So, that's what the sort of learning aspect of these models is. I have a cousin who's been a software engineer for most of his life, and he likes to call machine learning self-optimizing algorithms. So he's very squarely in the camp of this. These are not intelligent, systems that are learning in any real sense of the word, of the way a human being learns. But nevertheless, the self-optimizing aspect of machine learning is really significant and really powerful, right? The idea that you can have a significant data set, that you can engineer certain, features and parameters and model that data set, that it can make predictions about new data, and that the more data it's exposed to, the better the predictions get. That's really powerful, especially in our space for marketers, advertising, right? But it has many, that idea in general has applications, well outside of digital marketing, as well, and e-commerce, and so, supply chain rationalization, right? Inventory management, allocating resources, dealing with like seasonal changes in demand, any of that type of stuff. They're using it in healthcare more and more, right? I mean, being able to find anomalies in digital, like medical imaging. I mean, that's pretty amazing, right? And the more data the model's exposed to, the better it gets at seeing those anomalies, right? Which, in the case of like medical imaging, could be, early stage cancer, it could be et cetera, right? Diagnosing a certain kind of a breakage in a bone or an injury, et cetera, right? Brain scans, whatever. So there's the sort of general idea of ML is very powerful when you start applying it to specific use cases. And, to take it back to what I said earlier, right? The people at the leading edge of this are really tying these technologies to very specific objectives and use cases. And they are seeing very interesting, effective outcomes. Otherwise, they wouldn't continue to be investing in them. Then we have, of course, the other big trending term of, GPTs. So generative pre-trained transformers, right? So this is be and ChatGPT being the big example of this that certainly caught the most attention, and like maybe one of the fastest adoption curves, in recent technology. I mean, amazing how quickly people started playing with and utilizing that technology, building, as soon as they had the capability to build applications on top of that. And but so these generative pre-trained transformer GPTs, these are able to use underlying large language models, LLMs, right, which are essentially able to, model natural language systems, and then be able to, kind of essentially, that in that machine learning sort of umbrella, right, are able to predict. Like ultimately, an LLM just simply predicts like what's the next word in a string, in a string of words, right? Like that's ultimately what the LLM does by having that model of how a given set of language data functions, right? So chat, the GPTs, they're able to have a UI on top of that large language model where they can respond in a human-like way to text prompts, right? So in the chat GPT context, it's text, right, responses. So you can ask questions and the GPT will respond with well-formed natural language responses that are pulled from the underlying data sources that it has access to, and will use its training to essentially know what a reasonable response is, right, to that prompt. And there's a whole bunch of like emerging, ChatGPT hacks, right? Like how to use ChatGPT, for generating content ideas, for generating marketing headlines, blah, 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 right? So there's a whole bunch of emerging kind of practices, I guess, around how to best prompt, and optimize and tailor your prompts for the appropriate use case of a GPT. And so these GPTs are also not just limited to text, right? You have the ability to generate imagery, video, audio outputs based on prompts. You can generate code, which is text, of course, but I mean, you can generate actual working software code, right? You can generate well-formed Python and SQL and R, right, in order to accomplish things that you would have needed to hire a data scientist to maybe do, right? Like so there's a whole bunch of applications for that subset of technologies as well. And not surprisingly, there's a huge boom on the generative side of AI in particular. And there's also a whole bunch of ethical questions being asked on the generative side of AI as well. Yeah, so does that, do you, any questions around that? I mean, does that help clarify, I guess, the landscape we're talking about?
I would say we've talked about some potentials. I mean, I wouldn't use ChatGPT for marketing, to be honest. It's average at best and bad. I mean, it's not that bad, but I don't really like it. But it does have a lot of potential and it does have a lot of use cases. And I see more and more and a lot of companies adapting ChatGPT to do stuff within the company. That brings three things, like I pointed at the first of the episode: the potentials, the issues, and the risks. So we talked a little bit about the potentials, especially, and I think we should delve deeper into it, the potentials with ChatGPT from a different industry viewpoints. But I sh we should also point out the problems
Yeah.
that ChatGPT introduces, because it does introduce a lot of problems and risks, because digital transformation is all about being prepared for the future, the changes in the landscapes and in the regulations that go on
Yeah.
changing every day. And I think that overall AI presents a lot. As I said, it presents a lot of potential, it presents a lot of issues, and it also has a lot of risks associated to it. And companies need to know, CEOs need to know, this is what you look for if you want to achieve, this is what you look for if you don't want to be fined. And this is how should you avoid, the risks that come with ChatGPT. So I want to, you have the three main pillars that I want to really shine the light on from a company perspective. How can companies utilize and, use ChatGPT to their advantage? How should they mitigate risk and, privacy stuff? but also how, how can we, the red lines that you shouldn't be crossing. So I guess the mic is off to
Sure.
you.
Sure. I'll start with the red line first, and a big one for me. I come from a humanities background. Very, I have my guitar in the background here. I absolutely respect and appreciate original creative expression, right? I've seen some posts lately on LinkedIn. I wrote a children's book using ChatGPT. You
Oh,
did? You did? And it makes me, I mean, it almost makes me
cringe.
sick to, it makes me cringe and it makes me sick, to be honest with you, because it's just like flatly an idiotic thing to write, right? And I don't mean the person who wrote it is an idiot. I just mean they just thoughtlessly wrote something, to be on trend, right? You didn't write a children's book with ChatGPT. You prompted ChatGPT with something and it created an algorithmic output based on a model it had of literature of some kind, and that's what you got. Now, if you publish that and you put your name on it, shame on you. That's, now if you used ChatGPT to brainstorm a couple of themes, some ideas, right, and then you wrote something substantive yourself, that's a different matter. But so yeah, so I think and the flip side of that is the reason why a GP, I'm not going to use ChatGPT as the only example, and the reason any generative AI can create an output that resembles human language is because it has the human language model to begin with, right? So like you can only create a generative AI response, like in the style of Ernest Hemingway, because Ernest Hemingway wrote books, right? Or in the style of William Faulkner, right? Because there is a model of what like Faulknerian, like narrative, like sounds like and reads like, right? So, and this is why recently, like at the end of October, you had a like seven, the American, Media Network, the AMN folks, they released a white paper at the end of October, 77 page white paper, basically calling out that all of these generative AI technologies, they're basically pilfering people's original creative content, right? Without authorization or compensation, right? And building these language models on people's actual data and original content, right? Without due authorization. And they're really calling out that they're not questioning the benefit of these tools, but they're really saying there's these are this is not the case of fair use, right? Fair use has certain parameters around it from a legal standpoint in the US and the rest of the world. And they're really calling out quite clearly, right? That these large language models, if you look at the underlying data sets, they rely way heavily on news outlets, publishers, right? Sources that invest a ton of money in creating this content. And many of these tools are specifically designed to negate the need for a user to go visit the original content, right? They're meant to, give you an output in a UI where you don't like. So, for example, one of the distinctions they draw with search, right? The reason why the model behind search results and the underlying database of indexed content, why that works is because historically those search results have driven people to the original indexed content, right? So there's a mutually beneficial ecosystem there. These, this white paper is calling out, that those kinds of symbiotic ecosystem relations are being very much undermined by generative AI technology, especially in the search and information gathering type utilities, right? In terms of the potential, so that, I mean, those to me are some of the clear risks. I think you had called out a few. I mean, just data accuracy. Like I've tested some things, like for my personal interests. I do archery, I do hunting and fishing, and I've put some prompts into various generative AI tools, and I will tell you, oftentimes the results are quite disappointing. The language is all well formed. It's a, you know, they're understandable sentences and paragraphs, but like factually, they're often just dead wrong. Like bringing back incorrect data, like mischaracterizing actual individual people as like the owner of a company when they have nothing to do with the company. I mean, all kinds of things. So there's problems in that regard with just data integrity. You mentioned privacy and security. You know, certainly the ability to create content that misrepresents people and real entities is huge. Deep fakes, right? The whole idea of deep fakes, which could be imagery, could be audio, could be video, could be just text, right? Any of those things can grossly misrepresent people and real entities in ways that are, you know, quite harmful, right? So there's a huge, I guess, potential area for tort claims based on utilizing these tools, either inadvertently causing harm or maliciously causing harm to somebody, right? I think where the potential is highest is the reduction of effort on sort of rote and mindless tasks, right? Where, like, I think a chat bot is like a perfect example. There's a reason why so many e-commerce and online travel platforms have adopted, you know, chat bots for a long time now, right? I mean, this is now, I would call an embedded technology. I don't know if I'd quite go to mature given some of the mixed kinds of quality of chatbot responses you still receive, but like the companies that have the best chat technology in place, they really are what I would, you know, quite like unironically call like smart chat. I think, for example, like hotels.com, they have got a great chatbot engine. I mean, it's very easy to, if I go in and I have my reservation ID, I could cancel it over chat easily, get a confirmation that my, you know, reservation's been canceled. I can change a reservation, right, without talking to a human being. I can find out status of things. It's, you know, it's quite useful in that regard. And to the extent that it can do it well, I see no reason to have a living, breathing human being like just going and finding that same information for me, right? But the companies that are doing it poorly, it's still really poorly, and it's a terrible experience. There's nothing worse than like a chatbot pretending, you know, it's speaking in very like eloquent sort of fake English, right? Or whatever language the user is chatting in, right? But it quickly becomes apparent when there is not a good underlying data source or like logic for the common use cases, because, you know, very quickly you end up having to send an email to a living person, right? Or you end up being asked to call, or do you want somebody to call you? Whereas the really good ones can help you accomplish, you know, 80 or 90% of what you're trying to do. So I think the very, like, you know, kind of helping automate those rote tasks. I think on the, oddly, I can't even believe I'm citing this example, but like, say for like accounts payable and accounts receivable, the ability to ingest invoices and automatically process those, right? And just flag only anomalies, right? Like if you already have in your system that you're supposed to pay $500 to X vendor and you get an invoice for $500 and there's no discrepancy, why not just automatically approve it and pay it, right? Like if you already have things identified by a clear and automated process, then, you know, like why shouldn't you inbound and process invoices in an automated fashion, right? Why shouldn't you automate a whole host of processes that way, right? And just call out the anomalies for attention where they exist. So there's that kind of component. I think I'm really skeptical of, you know, I see a lot in the marketplace of using AI technologies to generate marketing, advertising images, advertising videos. I think if you have high quality, I mean, I think if you have high quality product images and you turn it into an animation, that's okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I think actually generating fake content, I think it's like whether or not the imagery is effective and manipulative of people's consciousness and subconscious is sort of like beside the point. It's a huge problem socially and culturally if we are promulgating fake content as if it's real content. I have a huge issue with that. It is back and bite us all in the ass. You know, and that sort of brings us to the sort of ethical domain as well, right? Like,
so what should companies do, to be honest? Like, they're dying.
Yeah.
Other than getting bitten in the ass.
Yeah. I mean, I guess let's just like dispel the idea that anybody is not using AI for one thing, right? So let's say like any company that is like really feeling anxious and nervous that they're behind the curve on AI, like your own developers should be like sitting at their desks, like actually creating AI applications and like ML applications. Sorry, most companies do not need to do that. The flip side of that is if you think you are not already using embedded AI, you're also mistaken, right? So if you do paid search campaigns, if you do paid social campaigns, if you do programmatic advertising on any of the leading and up-and-comer demand-side platforms, if you utilize a CRM like Salesforce and are taking advantage of, you know, like their Einstein Insights engine, if you are taking advantage of within Marketing Cloud, the ability to optimize the timing, the headlines, frequency, right, cadence of sending messages via email, SMS, push, right? If you're using platforms that optimize any of that for you, you're taking advantage of embedded AI already, right? So the tools we use, and especially in the MarTech and ad tech arena, right? Those tools are going to increasingly, they already are, and they are increasingly going to use embedded AI. That's unlikely. That's a change. But similar to privacy and consent, cookies and all the things, we are already seeing like a regulatory landscape emerge around some of this. So like there's the EU AI app that's kind of working its way through the system. I don't know if all the parameters have been agreed upon, but like, so they're essentially categorizing AI systems by four tiers of risk: unacceptable risk, high risk, low risk, or minimal to no risk, right? And they're suggesting certain restrictions, like unacceptable risk, this should be illegal, basically. So if a certain type of AI technology can literally lead to human harm, you know, threat to an individual and a fundamental right, like it should be regulated and illegal. High risk, there's, you know, a set of parameters around it, right? If it's likely to, you know, if it can cause harm to a person and infringe on a fundamental right, then it should be regulated and restricted, right? And there should be parameters around how it's used. And then in that kind of minimal and limited risk, you know, there's still sort of an expectation that there should be transparency around these things, right? So, for example, not passing off fake imagery as though it's a real image, like not creating like deep fakes that are, harmful to an individual, like, creating images that are borderline, pornographic, in, shameful, right? Slant, that portray somebody as though they're doing something that they clearly haven't done, right? Any of those kinds of things, right, would be, I think rightly so, regulated, and there'd be some expectation of transparency, and in the case of where you're truly harming people, out and out illegal. And I guess the question would be, can the, in certain contexts, right, can the current regulatory and legal framework in a given country like already handle that? Or are there needs for, new regulation around what's emerging, right?
A question to be answered. Not today, as we have finished as we have finished this episode.
No, but I mean, but
We're
it's a
waiting.
risk. Yeah, it's a risk, right? What if you, I mean, what if you use generative AI simply to create content which is, is clearly not real? Could would you be susceptible to being accused of like misrepresentation even, right? Like, if it's not like, if you use a fake image of a product that's not really an image of that product, right? Without a whole number of layers of like, this is a simulation. This is just a graphical representation of the product, right? This is not an actual photograph of the product. If somebody gets that product and now they don't like it, are they going to come after, are they going to come to you and say, are they going to come to you and say, you misrepresented this, right? It wasn't really the product. So, yeah, I think there's a whole bunch of open questions here.
I think that's it. That's it for today.
Oh,
We'll
wow.
we're already past the
We didn't
half
even
an
cover
hour.
the we didn't even cover this, the Sam Altman drama and how difficult it is to try and run a company that serves two masters, right? A non-profit arm to use technology to quote unquote benefit the world irregardless of profits, and then once you create a capped for-profit division, of course, now you serve two masters. And what happens then?
Now we're cooked.
Anyway, I guess he's back at the helm with the new board of directors.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But I think that's,
So.
it will, he will be coming back to like our maybe in future episode of the Digital Disruption Podcast, he will be back.
You never
What
know.
will he be back for? That's what we're gonna be out.
We'll find out.
But yeah. We'll see you in the next episode. So, what do we have for the next episode?
I think next time we'll talk about planning for 2024 as 2023 comes to a close. So, what should you be prioritizing? What's urgent and need to have? What's nice to have? What's strategic and future looking. So yeah, how can you start 2024 with a bang?
Sounds good. I'll catch you in the next episode then.
All right, sounds good.
All right. See ya. Bye bye.
Bye. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Digital Disruption Podcast. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the world of digital transformation and gained valuable insights to help navigate the ever-changing landscape. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach us on our website, esens.com, or connect with us on social media. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting discussions on the forefront of digital innovation. Remember, the future is now, and it's time to embrace the power of transformation. Thanks for listening, and until next time.